the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joins you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and with me today, as always, is Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Matt Velasquez. Matt, how are you staying warm on this tropical November we have in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm out of practice. I'm out of shape when it comes to dealing with the cold. You know, going to L.A. and Salt Lake City and Oklahoma City, all those places were notably warmer than Milwaukee. So I got home and, you know, I walked off the plane and I just felt that, you know, nice cold Wisconsin hug. It was not my favorite moment, but I'm glad to be home. Spent a lot of time on the road. This has been a rough stretch for the Bucks and by extension for me. 7 games in 7 different arenas on both coasts. It's been wild, but you know, back home, enjoying the opportunity to remind my family that I exist. And, you know, this is a nice little stretch here. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, no basketball games. Doesn't happen often this season. And just got to enjoy it.
It's been 7 different games, or I should say 7 different arenas over the last 7 games for the Milwaukee Bucks. Kind of alarming for you to say that Salt Lake is warmer. I mean, not that we picture that as a like freezing cold place, but they did have a Winter Olympics there, so I like to think it should be colder than what we have going on in Wisconsin.
No, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Of course it was.
Took a nice walk. It was like in the 60s. You know, I got some wonderful Mexican food with a picture of Guy Fieri right across on the wall, just staring down at me. everything you dream of. I mean, that's the Salt Lake City that everyone expects, right?
Yes, everything you dream of involving Guy Fieri. That is a dream for many. We'll talk about the Utah game because that is the one hiccup on their 3-1 stretch here. Things did go well for the Bucks. There were some caveats, a couple missing superstars from the opponents that we will talk about. But the first thing we got to get to came at the end of the road trip against Oklahoma City. The Bucks win a bit of a thriller. They lost a lead, an 8-point lead in 30 seconds, basically. And they were able, though, to salvage the win. Brook Lopez hitting a monster 3-pointer at the end. But before that, Chris Middleton leaving the game with an injury. And we learned on Monday that Middleton would miss 3 to 4 weeks with a leg injury. I don't actually know. You can maybe tell us a little bit about the particulars of it, but that is obviously a blow to the Milwaukee Bucks. He is, by and large, their second best scorer, if not their second best overall player. As you heard the news, I mean, the Bucks are fine right now record-wise, and I still think, you know, even if they treaded water for 3 to 4 weeks, I don't think anybody would be worried about it. I don't even think you necessarily have to assume all they will do is tread water without Chris Middleton, but what immediately jumped to mind is some of the concerns Bucks should have without Chris Middleton available to them.
Yeah, so I was definitely surprised that he'd be out this long. You know, we talked to Chris in the locker room after the game, and you know, it kind of seemed like almost like a Charlie horse type situation where, you know, he got a knee in the leg. It's officially a left thigh contusion. You know, and so he tried to stretch it out. He tried to get it massaged out, all this stuff, but just couldn't, you know, quite get back to the way he would need to be in order to return to the game. You know, and so, you know, you don't want to have like a dead leg and try and like be out there, you know, playing basketball. That doesn't seem conducive to the sport of basketball. So, you know, he had this compression sleeve on his leg, and he was walking around okay, a little gingerly, but he kind of said that he didn't think it was serious, and he hoped that in a couple days, you know, the swelling would go down or the pain would go down and he'd be fine. But I guess he had an MRI on Monday, and they determined that contusion was bad enough that he's probably going to miss 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, I'm no doctor, but I, you know, I did some Googling, you know, and, you know, it seems to me like this, it could be like a hematoma situation, which I guess like a bruise is more like, you know, kind of top level, like smaller broken blood vessels or whatever. Like it's not as deep seated. But a hematoma, when you have something making impact kind of at a high rate of speed or with a lot of force, that could cause the breakage of bigger blood vessels, causing a deeper, more intense bruising type situation. And, you know, you think, like, oh, he's going to miss 3 or 4 weeks with a bruise. Like that sounds kind of weak, but if it's like a much deeper set bruise, You know, that I think that makes sense, especially with, you know, in your leg at the point where he got hit. You know, like that's a muscle, that's an area that you use a lot, and if your body is internally healing, you know, that I can understand why that would take a while. And like I said, I'm not a doctor. This is not what I've, you know, any doctors have told me. This is just me conjecturing, you know, what I think that could be. But it is a rough situation for the Bucks. Like, he is, you know, their second highest scorer to this point this season. He's been off to a really good start, shooting 39.3% from 3-point range on over 6 attempts a game. So he's, you know, their most prolific 3-point shooter at this point. He's not, doesn't have the best percentage, but all the other guys are guys off the bench who don't take as many per game as he does. He also, you know, almost 6 rebounds a game, 3 assists a game. Like, he is a big part of what they do. And obviously, when it comes to his defense, being 6'7" and being able to be versatile and defend, you know, opposing teams' best wing players, and go up and down, he can defend, you know, 1 through 4, you know, pretty reasonably. So it's going to be tough. And, you know, the Bucks have a pretty big chunk of games that even if he only misses 3 weeks, he'll probably miss about 10 games, probably the rest of November, which, you know, is a significant stretch. And so they're going to have to, you know, figure out how to deal with him being gone, who's going to have to step up. My guess would be that Sterling Brown might move into that starting unit. You know, but no matter what, you know, even if Sterling Brown's getting more time, you know, you're also going to need more contributions from George Hill, from Sterling, from Dante DiVincenzo, from Kyle Korver. You're going to need Pat Connaughton. You're going to need those wings to step up to make up for the lack of Chris Middleton. I think the one good thing for the Bucks is that obviously Giannis is Giannis, and he has been carrying them so far. He's been incredible, and I don't think that he'll slow down anytime soon. I think Eric Bledsoe has been on the upswing and been playing really well over the past few games, you know, driving to the hoop and forcing the issue, making things happen. You know, so I think those two guys, you know, they recognize that they'll need to do more and they'll need to step up. You know, so at least you have them playing at a high level. And if that's the case, then maybe the Bucks can lean even harder on them, and maybe Brook Lopez can get going a little bit more. You know, he's had a slow start to the year in terms of his shooting. But if he can get back toward his averages and maybe, you know, show some signs of regression to the mean, then maybe he'll, you know, he can kind of help pick up the slack. So it'll be really interesting to see how they handle it. This hasn't been a situation the Bucks have been in that often. Chris Middleton's been a workhorse almost pretty much the whole time he's been in Milwaukee. There was that one year where he had that fluke torn hamstring. But other than that, he's played like 77 or more games for 5 years, 5 out of the 6 that he's been in Milwaukee. So this is definitely a new thing, and, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how it goes.
Middleton averaging 18.5 points per game this year, about a little less than 6 rebounds, very comparable to what he was doing the last year, what his averages are last year. We've talked about what a lightning rod he has been for fans. There is still a lot of lingering sentiment that the Bucks shouldn't have had to pay as much as they did for Middleton. I mean, we've spoken many times on this podcast about why they had to, or why it made the most sense for them to offer him a contract. I mean, just whether it's not as simple as comparing him to what other guys are making in the NBA and so forth. But I guess those fans are going to get their wish. They're going to see the Bucks play without him and see if they can survive without him. What has been your evaluation of Middleton's play so far this year? I mean, it seems like we're talking about roughly the same player you had last year when he was an all-star. But I don't know. Has he been a little bit, are there areas of his game that have been not as sharp in past years, or is this basically the same Middleton we've seen?
I think he's the same guy. I mean, he's been basically the same. The numbers all line up almost exactly. You know, the points, rebounds, you know, his assists are a little bit down, you know, but that could just be a function of, you know, guys just not making shots here or there just a couple times a game. He's playing basically the same amount of minutes. He's actually shooting better, you know, but overall, like, he's pretty much the same across the board. People might say, oh, well, maybe he's turning it over more. Yeah, he's turning it over less. like, or basically the same. It's like every year for the past 5 years, he's been at like 2.2 or 2.3 turnovers per game. Like, he is Mr. Consistent. That's why, you know, Jason Kidd back in the day used to call him their security blanket, because like you know exactly what you're going to get. Like, he is the same, you know, basically year over year. And there's something to be said for that consistency. Like, you kind of look at, you know, what he brings, and you know, you know you're going to get like quality 3-point shooting, solid finishing, you know, from the mid range and inside. He's going to make his free throws more often than not. He's going to help you on the boards. He's going to dish out some assists. You know, he's going to turn over a couple times a game, but that happens when you have like a, you know, a certain level of usage. You're going to turn the ball over sometimes. You know, he's going to put up, you know, about 20 or so, maybe a little bit more than 20 points per 36 minutes. So, you know, he is who he is, and you know, he's very important to what the Bucks have done. And I think he's important to what the Bucks will do. And obviously a lot of people wanted to pile on him after that game against the Utah Jazz, where he had the critical travel, and then he's the one who got, you know, who got beat by that Bogdanovich three. You know, and there's really no defending necessarily those plays. You can't say, oh, well, you know, it was a great play to travel. Like, no, that was like absolutely the worst thing that could happen. You know, he had a split second to decide what to do and made the wrong choice. And then Bogdanovich, you know, made the cut to the corner. He got, you know, caught. He was late, and, you know, ball game. So like, those two plays weren't great. But at the same time, if it's not for Middleton, you know, they're also not in that game at the end as it is. I mean, you look at what he did that game, and you know, he had 26 points. He was 5 of 8 on threes, 11 rebounds. You know, he was doing a whole bunch of stuff. He had some key plays, including a 4-point play during that comeback to help get them into it. You know, in a game where a bunch of guys didn't play well, I thought he played reasonably well. It's just, you know, that he was slow at the beginning, just like everyone was. Yeah, actually, he was one of the few guys who wasn't as slow. I think he had 13 points in the first half. So he kind of kept him afloat a little bit. Maybe he wasn't shooting as well as he could have, but he was still better than everybody else. Then Giannis takes over a little bit in the second half. Eric Bledsoe gets going a little bit in the second half. Middleton helps that come back. And, you know, it's just unfortunate for him that, you know, he figures in the way he did into the end of that game. But without him, they're not in the game at all. So, you know, I think he's still generally been a big positive for the Bucks this season, and they're going to miss him while he's gone.
One last thought on that Utah game. Bogdanovich, of course, hits the game-winning three, and like you said, the Bucks were out of that game. They had no business being in that game. I actually checked out with 30 seconds to go, legitimately went to bed, and found out the next morning that they lost on a buzzer beater, so that was surprising to me. But some whispering about Bogdanovich having been a possible free agent pursuit for the Milwaukee Bucks this offseason, and that maybe in some world they could have kept Malcolm Brogdon, who I think, as many fans know now, is off to a really good start in Indiana. He's been featured a little bit more than he would have been in Milwaukee, and he's made the most of it. So is there a world where the Bucks could have pursued Bogdanovich, assuming he's interested? We have no idea of knowing that. And kept Brogdon, and instead of keeping Chris Middleton, would that have matched up in your mind, or is that just a little retroactive continuity from people who are frustrated with seeing Middleton, I guess, not be a superstar? I can't really explain why people are so down on Chris Middleton. He is exactly what you just described, consistent. You know what you're getting from him. There's going to be some great plays, some tough plays, but a very good player. So what do you think about that possibility? Was that something that ever crossed your mind this offseason?
It never crossed my mind this offseason, no. I mean, not saying that it couldn't have happened. I guess, like, in theory, I'd have to, like, go back and work the numbers and see, like, okay, if they got rid of, like, Middleton's cap hold, you know, could they have brought in Bogdanovich and still been able to pay Brook Lopez and George Hill the amount that they paid them, and also bring back Brogdon? I think it would have been a little bit hard. You might have had to lose Lopez or Hill. As I said, this is the first time I'm kind of considering this, so I haven't really run the numbers, but it would be hard. But, you know, there's a possibility. But like, you look at it this way, too. If you were going to rank the players on the Utah Jazz in terms of, like, you know, how important they are to the Jazz, I think he'd be fourth. Like, I assume you put Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert one. I think Mike Conley, you know, is somebody who was lauded much more than Bojan Bogdanovic in terms of a free agent acquisition. So he's, like, basically their fourth option. Like, you wouldn't expect, I think that's fair. And like, you put Chris Middleton in a situation where he's the fourth option, I think he looks like a totally different player, and you're thinking about him differently. You know, and so I think that, you know, whether he's the second or the third option or whatever he is for the Bucks, I don't think he's fourth. And so it's kind of a different situation. I think that obviously when you have a team that succeeded at the level the Bucks did, like, you're going to try to keep them together and try to grow with that continuity. I think that that's not unreasonable. I think that certain teams, you know, and granted, like, they've had a lot of injury trouble, but like, you got the Portland Trailblazers, and they changed their team a lot. Like, they have basically a new team, and they've had some issues so far this season. I mean, the Jazz are 7-3, like the Bucks are, and they've overhauled their roster a lot too. You know, and so it's just a function of, like, how does the money work out? You have the relationships already. Like, you want to be able to signal to teams that, like, if you play really well, like, we are a franchise where you will get, like, your due. Like, we're not going to, like, you know, treat our own players poorly. Like, I think that Chris Middleton deserved the contract that he got, in the sense that, you know, if he had gone on the market, like, he would have gotten something in that range. Like, he would have gotten near a max from another team. And then the Bucks would have lost him for nothing. So, you know, Bogdanovich is a great player. Like, no one's saying that he's not. But he's not going to do that every time that these two teams play. He had an incredible night where he was 5 of 10 on threes. Middleton was 5 of 8 on threes. And, you know, it's not like, you know, it just so happened that Bogdanovich had the one that changed the, you know, the outcome of the game. And I think that overall, I think if people were ranking players in the league heading into the season, I think Middleton would have been ranked higher. I mean, I'm sure we can go back and check, like, ESPN and Sports Illustrated, all these places that do rank players heading into the season, but I would expect that Middleton was higher just because of what he has achieved and what he's done and the consistency with which he's done it. So, you know, they're both really good players, and on a given night, a really good player in the NBA can, you know, one can go off and one can have, you know, a slightly less good night. So I don't think that that's something that the Bucks would have done. I don't know if that Bogdanovich would have been interested in that, if that's, you know, if any of that could have actually shook out. But I think that Chris Middleton has been a positive for the Bucks in the time that he's been in Milwaukee. And, you know, like you said before, like, we're about to see what the Bucks look like without Chris Middleton, because, you know, he's going to be out for about 10 games.
Yeah, whether or not Bogdanovich is part of the equation, there's going to be a binary between Malcolm Brogdon and Chris Middleton for a while, especially if Brogdon keeps putting up these numbers. He's got more than 20 points per game, 8.9 assists, 5.1 rebounds. He's putting up all-star numbers. That's through 10 games, and the Indiana Pacers are not going to be as good as the Milwaukee Bucks this year. And again, he's given, you know, more space to do what he wants to do in Indiana. He would not have had the opportunities to put up those numbers in Milwaukee, per se. But it's just, that's a storyline that's never going to go away. Brogdon versus Middleton, that's going to be something we hear about, especially if Brogdon winds up on the All-Star team or something along those lines. The one, you know, probably the bigger concern that the Bucks should have with losing Middleton here is that it'll pull Sterling Brown almost certainly into the starting lineup, like you mentioned. And the bench has not been great. You wrote about this at jsonline.com about how the bench has had its struggles, even on this 3-1 road trip. You just didn't see maybe the maximum amount of output from those guys. Ersan Ilyasova, who was awesome to start the year, kind of tailed off a little bit. Saw some things from Robin Lopez. You know, Pat Connaughton's been a little dinged up. It just hasn't. We've seen Giannis pretty much at the peak of his powers. And actually, even beyond just the bench, there aren't many other guys that are having standout seasons yet. You've seen some pretty good runs from George Hill and from Eric Bledsoe, but really, the depth hasn't been clicking, and that is what carried this team to such a great record last year. How concerned are you about the bench and I guess just the depth of this team in general? And do you think it's just the type of thing where it's just sluggish start, 10 games, you can't make any real decisions about that? Or are there some signs that maybe this team is not going to have the depth that it had last year?
Well, I think that they have, you know, good depth. It's just that it's not clear, like, who's going to produce consistently. You know, you mentioned Ersan Ilyasova. Like he basically, I mean, I think I wrote about this, you know, he was like minus 55 in 32 minutes on the road trip. Like that's not all on him, but like when you're a net negative, like every time you're on the court, like that's not great. Like, you know, like when you get a bigger picture, like, you know, single game plus minus can be meaningless, because it just could be that you're on the court when the other team just starts making like a ton of crazy threes. But like if you're consistently a minus, like there has to be something there, like you would think so. You know, and he hasn't shot the ball very well recently. You know, when the Bucks have gone to their full bench unit, they've had some trouble over the past couple games. It's been kind of interesting to see how that's developed, and it hasn't been necessarily great. But like you look at individual guys, like, you know, Dante DiVincenzo had a great game against the Timberwolves, and like Kyle Korver and George Hill were, you know, part of the reason that the Bucks beat the Clippers because they shot the ball so well. You know, look at that Utah game, and like Sterling Brown had a bunch of like really like critical rebounds, offensive and defensive. You know, he was really good against the Thunder too. So like, they're getting like, you know, some contributions off their bench, and George Hill has been, you know, one of their better players so far this season. But like, you know, Ersan has struggled. Robin Lopez hasn't added all that much in terms of like, you know, coming off the bench. He's only averaging about 4 points a game. They're trying to get him to shoot more threes, and he is, and he's not making them at a high rate. He's 3 of 16. You know, so his value has not been fully realized yet. And then you look at the starting unit, like Wes Matthews, he's not playing, you know, he's only playing like 2 minutes more per game than George Hill. He's not shooting all that much. He's shooting less than George Hill is. You know, most of those shots are threes, and he's only shooting 33% so far. Eventually the expectation is that he'll make those, but he's not a threat to do anything other than shoot threes. He's not getting to the free throw line. He's got like an assist per game, about a steal per game, so I guess that's helpful. But he's not really doing anything on the boards. Like, he's just kind of there. And so, like, getting more out of West too will be important for this team, especially with Chris Middleton out, because they need guys who can create and make plays and score at different levels. And right now, he's basically doing what Tony Snell did last year, which was just shoot threes and, like, you know, maybe play some decent defense, and that's about it. And they're going to need more out of him. You know, whether you want him necessarily to be the one who has the ball in his hands, is trying to create and make plays, you know, that's a whole other discussion point. But like, if he's not a threat to do anything other than shoot threes, teams aren't going to, you know, worry about him as much, especially if he's not making them. So as a whole, like, the Bucks just need to, you know, figure out exactly how to best deploy their lineups and find ways to put multiple threats out on the court together, and get guys kind of going in tandem. Because right now you have Giannis who's being superhuman. You have Eric Bledsoe who's been playing well. George Hill's been like solid off the bench, but everyone else, you know, needs to take a step up. You know, especially with Middleton out.
You mentioned that Clippers game. We were going to talk about that. We talked about that on the last podcast, how excited we were looking forward to a matchup between Kawhi and the Bucks. And shortly after we recorded, it was very quickly revealed that Kawhi would be resting, load management, which became a very popular topic of conversation in the days after. A lot of people frustrated that Kawhi took the day off, seemingly just because. And I know the NBA has tried to, I guess, quote-unquote, crack down on that a little bit, not have guys, superstars in particular, especially for nationally televised games, sitting out just because. But with the back-to-back, the Clippers opted to have Kawhi play the following night and not against the Bucks, which is weird to me. I mean, why wouldn't you want him against the Bucks? But anyway, Milwaukee wins that game. It feels a little hollow because both Paul George and Kawhi didn't play. They were coming off an evisceration of the Minnesota Timberwolves that they probably would have won that game regardless of not having Karl-Anthony Towns. But Karl-Anthony Towns was suspended. That made things a lot easier for the Bucks to win in Minnesota. That's a pretty good team that might pose some problems in the Western Conference. But those two wins helped the Bucks, of course, get off to a good start on this road trip. They lose the nail biter to Utah, come back and survive their own nail biter against the Thunder. So the Bucks are 7-3, and you got to feel good about that. But at the same time, they've missed some of these superstars. You can count Jimmy Butler in Miami, even though they lost that game as well. I don't know. Does it feel like we still don't really know what to make of this Bucks team? We've been talking about some of deficiencies might be strong, but we've been talking about where they've struggled. Their percentages are pretty close to what they were last year in terms of shooting. Do you feel like there's still just a ton of questions left for this Bucks team, or is 7-3 7-3?
I don't think there's a ton of questions. I think we know generally who they are. They are who we thought they were, in a sense. It's just about execution and being more crisp and like getting, like I said, getting more guys to contribute at the same time. I think that, you know, they're getting good looks for Brook Lopez, and he hasn't been hitting them at a high rate. You know, they're getting, you know, like Dante DiVincenzo is getting to the rim, but he's not necessarily finishing as often as you know, the Bucks would like. You know, they'll have one guy off the bench who jumps off the page in terms of, you know, the way that he contributes, and other guys just aren't coming along with him. So, you know, they just need to kind of clean things up and get things going a little bit more. I think it's also important to note that, you know, so far they've had probably the toughest schedule in the NBA. They're the only team that's played 7 road games to this point in the season. You know, and they're 5-2. And so that's not too bad. Especially when you consider, you know, how many of them came, you know, in this past stretch. I mean, they 6 out of the past 7 have been on the road. And even when they did come home, it was on the second night of a back-to-back. So they really have been up against it in terms of the travel schedule. And they've held their own. You know, I think if you look at, like, you know, Basketball References, like Simple Rating System, like, they're ranked first in the NBA. Like, they may not have the best record, you know, but they have a top four offense. They're 10th in defense, which that's definitely where Mike Budenholzer would want them to be better. But they're playing at a really high pace, something that they have often said they want to do. So that they're doing kind of what they want to do. They just need to improve, especially that 3-point shooting. I mean, they're really good inside, you know, the 3-point arc. I mean, they literally have the best 2-point percentage in the league. It helps when you have Giannis doing Giannis things and being just absolutely monstrous in the second halves of games, as I wrote about on JS Online. But their 3-point percentage, you know, it's a very respectable 35%, but they're putting up the second most threes in the league. And so, you know, making 35%, that's 17th in the league. It's about average. It's about where you want to be if you're going to shoot threes. You know, the understanding is if you shoot 35% from threes, you're going to get more points than if you shoot 50% on twos. But they're shooting, like, you know, 57% on twos. If they can get to the rim more, it's going to open up even better three-pointers for the rest of the team. And, you know, it's kind of this thing that works in tandem where, you know, if Giannis can get to the rim, if Bledsoe can get to the rim, if they can, you know, really force the issues inside, teams will pull in even more, opening up even more 3-point opportunities that you would expect to knock down given, you know, really wide open looks. In terms of the question, I think we know who they are. We don't really know who they are in terms of a team that doesn't have Middleton. That will be very interesting over the next few weeks. But we know who they are. We know who they want to be. We know who they want what they want to do. It's just a function of executing better and finding ways, especially in these close games, to execute down the stretch.
Where do you come down on load management? Obviously, if you go to Los Angeles, you want to see Kawhi Leonard play. I know you're a fan of basketball. We talked about hoping that Zion Williamson is healthy enough to be playing when the Bucks take on the Pelicans later this year at Pfizer Forum. But this is a tricky issue. I mean, you can understand why teams just feel like they need to implement rest for their best players if they know they're a playoff team. The Bucks are absolutely in this boat, although we haven't seen Giannis rest any games this year. He did rest a few last year, probably not as many as he could have. And teams just are, you know, gearing up for the most important part of the season. It makes perfect sense. And there's sort of this existential crisis for fans and for the NBA trying to make sure they're, you know, the best product is on the floor, which, you know, your mileage may vary on how you view, you know, the business of sports in that regard. But where do you think it should just be sort of, you know, carte blanche, let your players rest if you want? Do you think there should be restrictions? How do you feel about it?
I mean, I think it's fair to have some restrictions. But I also don't begrudge the Clippers at all, especially, you know, when you look at Kawhi Leonard's situation, like, there's a history there. And, like, he missed basically a whole year in San Antonio, you know, with an injury. And last year, he played 60 games, and the injury was heavily managed. And, oh, look, he was incredible in the playoffs, and they won a championship. Like, isn't that the goal? Like, isn't the goal to win a championship? Like, not win a, you know, a random weekday night game just because it happens to be on TNT or on ESPN or whatever network it's going to be on? Like, you know, I think that we just saw how load management with Kawhi Leonard, like, worked. And it, you know, it maybe changed the power dynamic of the league in terms of, you know, everybody thought the Golden State was going to win last year and Toronto won and now he goes to the Clippers. And, like, that it's a whole new league now. The parity has shifted. And does that happen if the Raptors, you know, use Kawhi Leonard differently and he's not healthy for the playoffs? And, like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of questions. And, like, yes, like, fans do want to see the best players play. But when there's a back-to-back situation, like, I don't know, maybe just because I'm closer to it and I understand it a little bit better. Again, back-to-backs, guys sit out. It happens sometimes. Like, and sometimes those players are really good players. And it's a bummer. Like, Giannis has sat out parts of back-to-backs. He did it last year. He missed 10 games last year. And, like, not all of them were overtly because of injury. Like, there was one game where he got concussed. And so, like, the next game he missed, like, that makes sense. You know, one game he had he was a late scratch because his neck hurt. Like, and then he had other games where it was just, like, general knee soreness. Like, they could have called that load management. They could have said it's load management to help his knee, you know, but they just said, oh, he has knee soreness. And, like, were people unhappy about that? Sure. Like, last year there was a game that Giannis and LeBron sat out. Like, they both missed the game in Milwaukee. And was I let down? Yes, I was. Were people in Milwaukee let down? I'm absolutely sure they were. But, you know, that's part of the risk, you know, when you buy a ticket that, you know, you think this game is going to be Giannis versus LeBron, an awesome, like, clash of the Titans, and then it ends up being something, like, you know, much less than that, you know. And so, you know, those things can happen, and it's a bummer, but there's an inherent risk, and it stinks, but that's part of the situation. If you really want to see, like, the best players, like, I guess you just have to go to a playoff game. Because, like, because then, you know, like, they're not going to sit out their best players with no reason. Like, everyone's going to play. But in the regular season, like, those types of things can happen, which, if you're a fan of the league, I'm sure that's frustrating. I mean, it's frustrating for me when I can't see the best players, because I want to see the best players. Like, that's the, you know, the thing you want to do, right? Like, you want to see the best players. But I also understand, like, you know, that teams are going to do what is best for them and for their players in order to win in April, May, and June. Like, and the science is, like, not totally clear. I mean, I think it makes sense that if you don't play as many games in the regular season, you will be in better shape. You will have less mileage on you to be able to perform better in the playoffs. You know, but at the same time, like, it's still, that's not necessarily, like, the most fun thing for the viewer. And I think that, you know, the TV networks were up in arms. And, you know, I know Doris Burke got a lot of play for her radio hit that day in terms of talking about Kawhi Leonard and load management and all that stuff. And Doris Burke is the GOAT. And I've had a chance to interact with her a few times, you know, in this job, and she's been wonderful. But at the same time, like, when you're ESPN, like, and you have the Clippers on the front end of a back-to-back, and then TNT has the Clippers on the second end of the back-to-back, one of those networks probably isn't getting Kawhi Leonard. Maybe someone at the league office, like, you know, when they do the scheduling, should say, hey, let's not put the Clippers, when they're on a back-to-back, like, on national TV. Or let's, you know, try to avoid the Clippers being in back-to-backs again in marquee matchups. And then maybe that's not fair, because maybe then other teams are like, hey, you know, you're not avoiding our back-to-backs or whatever. It's, like, a really difficult situation. But if you have the Clippers on national TV two nights in a row and he's skipping back-to-backs, you're going to miss him, you know. And, you know, right now it's much less talked about, but the Bucks are load managing, you know, Kyle Korver. he's not playing in back-to-backs, and no one cares because he's because he's Kyle Korver. And I get it. He's not a superstar. Like, you're not paying to go see Kyle Korver. Maybe there's a few people who are. Maybe people are like, hey, I want to go see Kyle Korver today.
They're all from Nebraska.
Sure, and that's great. But, you know, every team does it. Like, every team finds opportunities to rest guys when they are, you know, probably healthy or they could play. You know, there were games last year where I know that, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, like, rested. He literally never played in Detroit last year. Like, whenever they went to Detroit, it's like, yeah, Malcolm's not playing. It's like, oh, he's got this, he's got that. It's just a time to rest. And so, like, he rested. And, you know, there's not going to be a solution for this. It's just not going to happen. Other than, like, maybe, like, NBA teams, like, offering some kind of, like, you know, waiver or some kind of thing for fans, say, hey, like, if you're going to game and this player doesn't play, like, you can get a new ticket or something. I have no idea. Like, you know, maybe there'll be some fine print, like, hey, like, you know, the load management ticket package where, you know, you pay for a certain number of games, and if somebody gets load managed, you get a different game. I have no idea. Like, but there's not an easy fix. You know, you want a side on the side of players being healthy and healthier for longer. Like, you want guys to be able to play, you know, as long as their bodies will allow, you know, for as many years as possible, as opposed to, you know, just play game after game after game, just grind all the time, and then, you know, not have as long of a career. So it's hard. There's no answer, and that's the long answer.
Yes. Yeah, and I don't think the NBA cares much about the fans actually going to the games. They're getting in the door. They're getting the experience. I think it's more about, like you mentioned earlier, the TV ratings, keeping those TV networks happy, and knowing that when they have a game on a big platform, they'd like a big audience to be tuning in to see the best players in the world play. Man, where is the rage for Kyle Korver sitting out? We need to generate some of that. When he's missing a game, we need there to be an outcry. Because that is robbing us of the Kyle Korver experience. We're running a little long, so I'm gonna quickly ask one last thing here. I was gonna ask a little more about Eric Bledsoe. We talked a lot about him last time. He seems to be doing great, but let's for the moment focus on Giannis, who is unbelievable. We updated the book of Giannis, featuring his 24 best plays in a Bucks uniform when he threw down an outrageous dunk off of a great no look bounce pass from George Hill against Oklahoma City on Sunday. I feel like Giannis is playing better than he was last year, and there's already, as there is every year, discussion about who the MVP could be in the early going. You know, there's like Russell Westbrook is somebody who would get some thought. There's plenty of guys. But Giannis is incredible right now. And even though he's still probably picking up some ticky-tack fouls here and there that he doesn't need, he's, you know, fouled out of that game again against Utah, so that's his third foul out of the year, and I know that's a concern, but, I mean, what are you seeing this? Are you seeing Giannis even better than he was in his MVP season?
Yeah, it's wild. He has been better. I mean, it's only 10 games, but he has been better. The numbers, you know, bear that out. He has the best PER in the league. He's getting to the rim, especially in the second half. Like I mentioned in my story on JS Online, you know, just how, you know, dominant he's been in the second halves of games. You know, he comes out of halftime and he just, you know, has a different aggression about him. And he refuses to be deterred, you know, from getting to the rim, from throwing down dunks. You know, he really tries to call his own number. And once he does that, so far, really no one stopped him. You know, Utah held him to 2 points in the first half, and then he, you know, scored 28 in the second half and just did everything, you know, to get his team back in that game. But he's been great, and he's shooting the 3-point shot, you know, pretty well. I think he's at 30.8%. You know, and that's ahead of, you know, some other star level players. I'm pretty sure that's better than Kawhi Leonard at this point in the season, if we're looking for a comparison point. You know, those are two guys who will be in the MVP discussion. Both, you know, Lakers stars will be in the MVP discussion. You know, so far Luka Doncic has potentially put himself in the MVP discussion. Nikola Jokic, he's had a couple game winners recently. He's been great. But Giannis, you know, he has a chance to be a back-to-back MVP. If he can keep this up, that would be insane because his numbers, you know, so far have been fantastic. I mean, you look at his per-game averages, 29.7 points, 14.3 rebounds, 6.8 assists, 1.6 blocks, 1.3 steals. He's shooting 66% on two-pointers and almost 31% on threes. You know, those are all up. from last year. Like every single number across the board, you know, that I just listed, those are all up. You know, obviously his turnovers are up too, his fouls are up too. Those are kind of problem areas, things that he'll need to figure out. But everything else he's been doing, you know, just so well. And you know, we saw a little bit of, you know, not just the aggression on the court, but you know, ripping his jersey on the way into halftime, you know, in Oklahoma
Kicking
City,
a
like
sign?
Yeah, like that's a pretty big sign, and like the hole in it was remarkable. You know, and obviously he apologized for that, so there's no excuse for that, and yeah, he shouldn't have done it. But that's just, you know, sometimes that happens. And you know, the fact that he's able to be that upset and be able to channel it into like basketball performance and not just like destruction of property, like that's impressive. Like not every player can do that. Not every player has that kind of like mental makeup where, you know, they can, you know, have that like blinding rage and, you know, be able to focus that on the task at hand instead of it just like kind of taking them out of the game. Just wild. You know, I also learned, you know, cause I asked Giannis after that game, I was like, hey, like, do you normally have to like change your jersey at halftime? Have you ever had to do that? And he was like, oh no, I do it every game. I'm like, at halftime, you do it every game? He's like, yeah, every game. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. I mean, I guess like he sweats a ton. And like, if you can have a dry jersey for the second half, like that's going to be like less weight on you in terms of like, just you're not carrying around like all that first half sweat, and you're probably going to feel a little bit fresher. So, I mean, that makes sense. It's not like I ever had that opportunity. It's not like, you know, playing middle school basketball, I can change jerseys at halftime, you know, but, you know, it makes sense, but you know, you learn something new every day.
It's true, and the Milwaukee Bucks now will have finally a home game against the Chicago Bulls on Thursday, and then, hey, it's back on the road. You mentioned they got a tough schedule. It is, by strength of schedule, the number one toughest schedule in the NBA so far, yet they're 7-3 on the road. They at least get to stay a little close to home. Indiana, Malcolm Brogdon on Saturday, and then again on Monday against the Bulls in Chicago before a visit to Atlanta, and then they get to stay home for a little bit. Matt Velasquez, we never have load management on the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. We're with you every week, early one, either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of each week. Matt, thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right. We'll be back at it next week for sure.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Find me on Twitter. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Matt's not hard to find on Twitter either. He's Matt_Velasquez. You can certainly find him and let him know what you think. Let me know what you think, and we will hopefully implement that and continue to bring you the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast every week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat with you again real soon. Bye-bye.